So I do have to ask, did the story change significantly, like from your original outline, your original vision to what it ended up being?
It changed a little bit.
Okay.
I knew that I wanted Amy to be somebody who did not want to go. Like, her dad's eccentric, he's a scholar. Her sister is a scholar. Her little sister is a painter, and they're all so passionate and swept up. And Amy is the practical one. And she just wants to be a homemaker, does not want to leave England, does not want to go on this grand tour. And so it's a second chance romance, and she was in love with somebody local named James, and they had a falling out, and he left. She never saw him again. That was 6 years ago. And so when she arrives, she's just trying to like take it all in and, be brave and not, she's chastising herself for being sort of like the spinster aunt. Like, she's going to turn into the spinster aunt that like has nothing to say but negative things or whatever. And then she sees James. And so originally in the story,
Welcome to the Literary Escape Podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre, and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode.
Welcome back, everyone, to another Literary Escape podcast episode. And today I am so excited to introduce to you Jenny Gouttet. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm super excited because you are over in France, correct?
That's right.
Yes. And you write Regency romance.
Regency and Georgian. So it's, I'm starting to do more of the 18th century rather than just the 19th century. But yeah, that whole Regency vibe period.
So how did you discover your love for reading and writing in that genre?
So when, to be perfectly honest, I grew up reading the classics and continued reading the classics when I was a young adult. And I kind of had a prejudice against romance, thinking that it was not smart literature. And I mean, of course, I loved Jane Austen. I mean, that was just a given and everything. But what happened was a friend introduced me to Georgette Heyer, and she writes Regency. If you know her, you know her. She's the goat, as my teenager would say. She writes Regency, she writes historical, she writes Georgian, even medieval, or earlier, like maybe more Renaissance. And her books are so smart. You know, they're romances, but they're so smart and witty. And I thought, wow, like, I love reading this. And when I came to the end, I was like, well, I want something more like this. I know I'm not the only author that started that way because they wanted more Georgette Heyer books.
That's awesome. I love that. That's kind of how I got into mine too. I said, I want more like this. And that's great because, and I hope that that just continues generation after generation. So we just have more and more writers coming in. So what does a typical writing day look like for you then?
There is no typical. There is no typical. my life is pretty hectic. So we have three teenage young adult children. We are very active in the teen ministry at church. I am not just writing, but also promoting the books and active locally. And so basically it's kind of trying to fit in writing wherever I can. Sometimes that means first thing in the morning, I'm able to get going. And sometimes that means, you know, like half the day goes by and I haven't gotten it done. Sometimes I'm like, okay, I have to just do 1,000 words before I go to bed. So it's not very, I would love it to be much more organized than it is the truth.
You make me feel so much better because so many authors that we interview, they have a very, I don't want to say strict, but a schedule that they follow. You just make me feel better because you're right. Life takes over with kids. And if you're working a different job besides just writing, yeah, you just fit it in where you can fit it in, right?
And that can make it harder because you're out of the groove, you know. But then I wouldn't want to be so cut off from life that, and that, you know, saying anything against the people that are able to do that. I really think that that's a gift to be able to do that. So I'm not saying anything against that, but I wouldn't want to be so cut off from life that, you know, I had all that time. If I have all that time on my hands, it means I'm not involved in other people's lives, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, completely understand. So today I'm really excited because we're here to talk about your book, A Love Once Lost. So where did before I ask that question, I was curious if this is a standalone or is it part of a series?
Yeah, it's part of a series. I signed a series with Haven. The series is called The Bridwells Grand Tour. And for anyone who doesn't really know what the Grand Tour is, it's kind of an extended vacation that gentlemen took right out of university. And it was sort of a finishing education to polish them and their speech and all of that. And I had the idea, what if we have this scholar, this eccentric gentleman, and he has no sons, but he has 3 daughters, and he decides to take them on tour so that he can kind of turn them into these brilliant luminaries of the time. And so that was the idea for the series.
That is wonderful. And how did you come up with that? Just after researching, or what was your inspiration for it?
Well, I think I liked the idea of doing a book about the Grand Tour. Now, obviously, that's not something we write about much in the Regency era because Napoleon, we were at war, like England and France were at war. So there were no people coming over to the continent to explore it. So it was something that happened in the 17th century, 18th century, took a break from the Napoleon era, moved on into the Victorian era, but sort of changed with the advent of travel, trains, and things like that. It became less of a prestigious thing, and it became more of a kind of like upper middle class. It was not just nobility or, you know, the bourgeois that did this. So what was your question? It was like how I came up with the idea.
Yes. Well,
I knew that when I was discussing with Haven about the series, I knew that there were enough Regency authors, and I had already written a book set on the continent in the 18th century. And so that's what I decided to do for the Bridwells Grand Tour. It does not take place in England, and it does not take place in the Regency era. So that kind of makes it different.
Yeah, interesting. So you may have touched on this a little bit, but I was just curious if any real people, I know obviously places and events inspired it, but any real people mixed in there or no?
Yeah, okay. So there are 2 modern people. There was the tour guide, Gaston. And he was, you know, he was quirky and funny, and he was good at what he did, and he showed us everywhere. And then he also put us in touch with a woman named Annette, and she runs the Museum for Laundry. So they teach about old methods for cleaning and how they did it and everything from the era. And so, you know, she also explained a lot, not just about laundry, but just about the history of spa. And so I put both of them as characters in my book. So those are modern examples. But as old examples, I used, you know, Madame Necker. She and her husband are French, and they were part of the Enlightenment. They were kind of mixed between, you know, nobility, bourgeois, and the Revolution. They escaped the Revolution, but they were kind of like in between the two. They were there during that period. There was a Russian princess that I vaguely used as an example. And then the places obviously were all very real from the era, even though only one of them is still standing.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's awesome. I'm now curious. This is not typically the genre that we read in, but I was on your website looking through things and, mm-hmm. and now just chatting with you a little bit, I'm kind of excited to get my hands on your book and try it out.
Thank you. So, thank you.
Yeah. So I do have to ask, did the story change significantly, like from your original outline, your original vision to what it ended up being?
It changed a little bit. I knew that I wanted Amy to be somebody who did not want to go. Like, her dad's eccentric. He's a scholar. Her sister is a scholar. Her little sister is a painter. And they're all so passionate and swept up. And Amy is the practical one. And she just wants to be a homemaker, does not want to leave England, does not want to go on this grand tour. And so it's a second chance romance. And she was in love with somebody local named James, and they had a falling out and he left. She never saw him again. That was 6 years ago. And so when she arrives, she's just trying to like take it all in and, you know, be brave and not, you know, she's chastising herself for being sort of, like the spinster aunt, like she's going to turn into the spinster aunt that like has nothing to say but negative things or whatever. And then she sees James. And so originally in the story, I knew that I was going to have him engaged to someone else, but I thought about making it so that he was truly in love with this other woman, but still set back by seeing Amy, and that she seemed like a nice person, but that little by little, all the cracks would appear and you would see, wow, she's really not a good person and really not good for him. I wasn't able to do that. I just realized that no, he needs to be doing it more for mercenary reasons and have second thoughts right from the beginning. So that was something that changed from my initial vision.
Oh, neat. It is interesting how it evolves as you write too.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So were there any scenes then or characters that you had to cut that maybe you wish you could have had stay in?
Let me think. No, I mean, there were scenes because I had changed that, you know, I wanted it to be more like where like she thought she was developing a friendship with the fiance only to find out that, you know, the fiance was terrible later on. But so there were scenes related to that, but I didn't really have to cut much else. And I didn't have to cut characters.
That's wonderful. Because it's always hard to do that, I think.
Yes.
To cut the characters and scenes.
Yeah. And then also you're like ahead on your word count. And for readers who don't know what it's like to be an author and word count, you know, it's like when you start, you know, you're at zero and you have to go to this, you know, 80,000. And then so each day that you advance, you're like, and then you get to the middle and you're like, I am never going to leave the 40s. I'm always going to be in the 40s. And so when you actually have to cut scenes that you wrote that contributed to your precious word count, it's really hard.
Yes, I agree. So you touched a little bit on your research. How much research, I'm sorry, let me try that again. How much research did you do? And were your primary resources the people that you already talked about that you went physically to the places to mm-hmm. speak with them?
I read a lot, and a lot of my research was from books. So some of the books I got there, the local bookshops, I picked up a couple of pamphlet books in the museum there, and the museum was also a source of education for me. The Office of Tourism, but a lot of it was research on SPA itself, research on the grand tour or on the tour of the different sources around Europe. There was also more research to be done on the clothing, because even though I'd written one book in the era before, I still feel like I always need to improve. So yeah, but I spent a lot of time reading stories of the era, and I really wanted to fit everything in. But I'm like, I'm not writing a nonfiction historical book. This is a romance, and so Denny, you cannot use that.
Oh, I love it. So what was the most fascinating historical detail you came across while researching?
Well, there was, so they have this monastery. I don't know if this was the most fascinating. There were so many interesting things. Okay, here's something I used in the book, I'll tell you. I didn't cut it, but it's when they first started trying baths, like bathing in the mineral water, it was done in like kind of a waterfall, but it was like partway down the city. There was a hotel and you would like sit in the water there. But sometimes the marchand, how do you say that? The merchants were like cleaning intestines, pig intestines and vegetables. And so they're sitting in the water and this tripe, you know, floats by and carrot peelings and things like that. So I actually used that. I was just like, that's, you know, that's too funny not to use. But there was one scene that I thought was interesting and I kind of wanted to put it in, but I didn't. There was a very strange statue and they had the garden. It was the monastery, the Capucine monastery. And there was a statue of Jesus and they had the water coming out of the holes in his hands and his feet. But there was enough like, that's weird that they eventually got rid of it. So it was in place when my story was set, but I think it was removed the year after. So that was just kind of an interesting historical thing that I would like to have used, but it just didn't fit. So.
Yeah. Oh, that is very interesting.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So I know this is not a Christian romance. This is just clean romance, but what do you... Well, let's start with this question. I know you are a believer and that is that is your true identity, right? You've expressed that before. So what made you kind of go into writing clean romance rather than inspirational romance?
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up going to church. It was something that our family did, but I wouldn't say that there was a lot of, it didn't really impact our lives necessarily outside of Sunday. So I was kind of a Sunday Christian and I definitely had my own things that I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to travel the world. I wanted to be sophisticated and I did not want to kind of identify with the humbler aspect of being a Christian. So that was something that I just didn't connect to at all. But during that period, and so what eventually happened is that, you know, I went through a period of grief and difficulty, and that kind of brought about my faith, and, you know, God had mercy on me, and I was able to find him, like truly find him. But growing up, even if I wasn't necessarily somebody who wanted, who identified as a Christian in the deeper sense, when I would read books that were not overt, but had these noble underlines throughout the book, it inspired me. I wanted to, like, it inspired me to crave something more noble. I think if it had been directly about faith, maybe I would have, you know, kind of pushed back a little bit. But the fact that it was all of the noble elements of God without necessarily, kind of like the book of Esther, without really mentioning God, but you have all of the nobility of it, then, you know, it inspired me. And so I wanted to write books for people like me.
I love it.
And,
I love it.
You know,
it.
Also Christians like it too. I mean, it does yes. have, you know, it's not like a Christian can't, but I wanted to also include people that necessarily are not ready to go full on, but who are craving that sort of comfort of all of the wonderful qualities that God is.
Yes, I love that. It's almost like a bridge into that inspirational. Yes, I love it. So what do you hope then that your readers might walk away with spiritually from your books?
Maybe to feel that they are seen and, Yeah, that they're seen, that there is a greater plan, that they're loved, that there's hope. I think that's a big one, that there's hope, because a lot of times we can go through life and hope seems very dim. Whether we have a naturally depressive tendency or a naturally optimistic tendency, sometimes life can feel very dim. Hope can feel very dim. And I just wanted to shine it bright and say, no, it's not dim. It's there and within reach.
Yes, I love that. Love it. So I do have to ask, when you think about your characters, which one in this book is your favorite?
Favorite. Okay, that's not fair. But, well, the one I identified the most with, I would have to say, is probably Hannah. She's the second sister. She's a middle child. I'm a middle child. She is trying to please her dad. She's trying to be a scholar like him. She's trying to be recognized for her intellect and all of these other characters. Like, I'm definitely not like Amy, the homemaker that wants to stay home. I had a lot of fun writing her because I felt like I could identify with that kind of person. And I'm not the more flighty artist, like fun, playful, but not very responsible little sister. I'm like Hannah. I'm the one that, you know, wants to be respected for who she is.
Yes. Oh, and her story coming in book two of the series?
Yes, I'm writing it right now. And her story is set in Paris. So that's easy for me. I just have to like hop on a train and go visit the places I want to visit. And it's the life of a blue stocking. And for anybody who doesn't really know what that is, it refers to women from the era who are interested in scholarly things, enlightenment, literature, philosophy, but it's sort of a derogatory term because it was not considered very feminine to be like that. So she is a blue stocking. She wants to be accepted in the literary salons in Paris. And of course, the perfect guy for her is the exact opposite. He is a like flippant party boy, French, you know, so it's a lot of fun. I'm writing that one right now.
That one does sound like fun. I can see a lot of clashing in there. Definitely between those two characters. Love it. Did your main characters do anything that surprised you while you were writing? Or do you feel like you really plan it out?
I'm not a great planner. I have some vague ideas. I guess what if there was anything, it would be that Amy was finally able to stand up to her dad. I mean, it's not like her dad was a tyrant. It was more that he was distracted, you know, and she was finally able to kind of tell him like it is and tell him that she and James were in love and that she was, you know, trying to help him and all of that. And like finally stand up for herself because she's somebody who doesn't normally do that. So I suppose it was a little bit of a surprise, but I also suppose it kind of had to happen. Like if you don't have any major change, then the romance falls short. Like there has to be some sort of evolution, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah.
That character arc has to be in there. Yeah. Definitely.
Exactly.
So how do you handle writer's block, or is that not an issue for you?
Writer's block, yeah, it's a big challenge. So I started out just really just painfully going through it. Then I started to be able to chat with other authors, and that really helped, and just kind of, you know, keep coming back to it. I paid for a development edit. I've done that for a few times lately. I don't get me wrong, I'm very careful with artificial intelligence, but when I don't use it to write, I don't use it to edit, you know, but when I am really stuck and I need to advance, I'll use it to jog ideas, you know? And so, but a lot of times writer's block is simply like, Jenny, you have no choice. You have to write 2000 words today. And so sit down, put 30 seconds on, put your headphones, write for 30 minutes, and then you do it again and you get your word count in. It's just more like, so, and then as I write, the ideas come.
Yeah.
So,
and I've found that too. You're right. You mentioned earlier about sometimes when you don't have that set routine, you kind of get out of the groove and you just, mm-hmm. it sounds like you just push yourself back into the groove and then things flow for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. So I have to ask you, this is a second chance love story, but what tropes do you love to write versus some that you try to avoid?
Okay. What I love to read and what I think is really fun. So I'm not answering your question the way you're asking it. I'm going to answer it the best I can. What I love to read and what I think other people love to read is really enemies to lover. But what I end up usually doing is creating cinnamon roll, nice guy heroes, because that's what my husband is. And so, you know, I want it to be all enemies and lovers, but it's just not. So that's the trope that I love. But the truth is, I don't think that there's any trope that would be considered clean romance. Like, we do stay within this, you know, this genre that I avoid. I think I like to have the challenge, like, okay, write a marriage of convenience, or write, you know, a shy person. Like, you know, I like to do, be varied and try everything.
I like it. So do you then draw inspiration from other genres as well?
To a certain degree. I don't know. I probably do, without realizing it. I suppose if there was any genre that I do draw from, it's K-drama. I really like K-drama. I like C-drama. I think they're very good at romance and like slow burn and longing and things like that. But yet it's modern and it's, you know, it takes place in Asia and everything like that. So I suppose if I draw from anything, it would be that.
Okay. Do you have, I know you mentioned one author already, but do you have like a handful of authors that have influenced your writing?
Yes. So I would say, obviously, Georgette Heyer is number one. Influences definitely coming from the classics. Like, I grew up on Dickens and Austen and just all these things. And you know, I'm like, I love the classics. So those have influenced my writing. In terms of authors these days that I love to read, I would still say Mimi Matthews is one. I love Julie Klassen. You know, there are a few handfuls that, there is a handful of authors that I think is really good. And so, yeah, so I'll read those.
Awesome. Do you have well, I should ask, you've already told us a little bit about book two. Do you have any other hints you can give us on what you're working on next?
So yeah, there's book two. I am going to immediately after that, while it goes to the editors, I'm going to be writing the next in my series called The Earl's Sisters. And this is Regency. And the next book is called Wit, Wiles, and Courtship. The whole series, The Earl's Sisters, is about, you know, an earl and his five sisters. And, you know, of course you assume that the earl is like, you know, this older guy, or at least, you know, of maritable age and everything, but he's not. He's like, at the beginning of the series, he's a 12-year-old and he is a scamp. He's constantly like saying things to embarrass his sisters and everything like that. So that's my Earl Sisters series. And that's what I'm going to work on next when I'm finished with book two.
Oh, that one sounds like fun. I assume that series will end with him.
Yep, he gets his own story, okay. And it's going to have to be really good, because he has caused his sisters enough embarrassment. So his heroine is going to have to really, really keep him on his toes.
Yes. Oh, I love it. It sounds great. All right. Are you ready to do a little short rapid fire section?
Sure.
Okay. So what songs would be on this book's soundtrack?
A lot of classical, have to say. I'm also, my dad was a classical musician, so classical. But if there was one modern, I would say the song Jealous, and the artist is Labyrinth. He's a British artist, and it's a really good a really good song for it.
Oh, wonderful. And do you do coffee or tea while writing?
Coffee for sure.
Are you a plotter or a pantser?
I would love to be a plotter, but I am a pantser.
That is
I'm a
okay.
pantser with a plotter personality, and I'm a coffee drinker with a tea drinker personality.
I love it. I love it. And are you a morning writer or a night owl?
Morning. I will write at night if I have to, but I feel so much better when I do it first thing in the morning.
And what's always on your desk while you write?
My to-do list, colored pens, and a big thing of water.
Okay. And if your main characters could visit you for dinner, what would you serve and what would you talk about?
I would probably serve them something really modern, and I would talk about all of the inventions that had happened since they lived, because I've spent enough time in their world, and so now it's time for them to spend some time in my
Oh, that's fun. I love it. All right. And then as we kind of wind down here, just I think this is just a fun one to ask authors. If you could tell your pre-published self one thing, what would it be?
Don't let any ideas of why you think you can't do it win. If you think, oh, I won't be able to write because I'm going to have carpal tunnel. Well, maybe you won't. Or, oh, I'll never be able to finish a whole book. Well, maybe you'll finish 20. Just start and then see where it goes. That's what I would tell her.
Oh, that's awesome. And where can our readers connect with you and find your books?
Okay. My books are everywhere. So you can find me on YouTube with my name, Jenny Gouttet. And I do talk, but I also have all of my books on the audiobooks on YouTube that you can listen to for free with ads. You can find me on Instagram, Jenny Gouttet. You can find me on Facebook, so or on my newsletter, my website. It's all Jenny Gouttet. It doesn't change. It's very easy to find.
I love it. You know what? That is very smart to keep it all the same, so it's not hard to find you. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners that maybe we didn't get to touch on today?
Maybe just, I think for me, I've had a kind of a varied life. I've lived in Asia, I've lived in Africa, I now live in France. I lived in New York City, and so I think a lot of that comes into my writing. Just this connection with other cultures and varied and so I wanted to say that, that's something interesting about me. And then also to any aspiring writers, it doesn't matter if you don't visit other countries, but the more experience you have and the more varied your life, the more it's easy to draw on inspiration.
I love that. That is wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Jenny, for joining us. I really, truly enjoyed connecting with you and meeting you today.
Thank you, Melissa. Likewise, thanks for having me.
Yes. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please consider sharing our podcast. Every share helps us reach more readers and authors like you. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.